You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO at 100.5 FM.
In 2004, Monsanto abandoned plans to introduce genetically modified wheat onto the world market. They made that decision despite spending 7 years and hundreds of millions of dollars developing the crop. The decision followed pressure from U.S. and Canadian farmers and anti-GM groups. Of course, Monsanto's desire to market its genetically modified crops is not over. The next product up is GM alfalfa. Emily Eaton is an assistant professor of geography at the University of Regina. She's also the author of the just-released book, Growing Opposition, Canadian Farmers and the Politics of Genetically Modified Wheat. And Emily has joined us by phone from Saskatchewan. Good morning, Emily, and welcome to Red Eye.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Why did Canadian farmers oppose the introduction of GM wheat?
Well, that's a really interesting question. There were actually 9 organizations that were part of the coalition, which announced itself in 2001 as opposed to the introduction of genetically modified wheat. 6 of those groups were farm and rural-based groups, and they had actually a wide-ranging viewpoints on why it should be, why it should not be introduced. But you had everything from the Saskatchewan Organic Directorate, the National Farmers Union, who were making a little bit more radical arguments about the patenting of crops, about possible environmental threats, to general farm organizations from Saskatchewan and Manitoba, who were basically arguing that the crop wouldn't be make good agronomic sense for them. So a wide-ranging variety of ideas behind that.
Well, that's one of the ways to get greater strength, certainly, if there's multiple reasons for it. GM canola was introduced in the 90s, and at that time there wasn't the same level of opposition from farmers. So what's the difference then between the GM wheat opposition, which was successful, and the canola, which proceeded ahead?
Yeah, well, that's actually the subject of one of the chapters in the book. So I look directly at the difference between these two crops. And I look at sort of both historical reasons and contemporary reasons around the crop. Historically, of course, Canadian farmers, prairie farmers in particular, have a particular attachment to wheat because it was the crop with which the prairies were settled. There was also a lot of cooperative activism around wheat, and so the Canadian Wheat Board, pools for wheat, elevator cooperatives, all of that came out of a political history around wheat in the prairies. It's a culturally significant food for consumers, of course, and it acts differently in the fields. So Canadian farmers have a tradition of saving their wheat seed and of replanting it without large cost, versus a crop like canola, where farmers, for the most part, buy their seed every year from the dealer. And canola, you know, doesn't have the same sort of cultural significance that wheat does. It's not a significant food. It has different sort of industry origins. It doesn't have organizations like the Canadian Wheat Board, which I guess no longer has its single desk, but at least historically, in the canola commodity chain, there weren't these large producer-oriented organizations that were also controlling it. So those are some of the reasons. And I guess just biologically, it acts a little bit differently in fields. There was a sense amongst prairie farmers that they didn't need a second Roundup Ready crop in their rotations, that they were using wheat to break the cycle of disease, and that it was less weedy in the first instance.
So regarding the opposition to genetically modified wheat, if we go back again, sort of where we started, on the one hand, you had Greenpeace and other local farmer groups. What was the common ground between them in a broad coalition?
Well, there was it was interesting, actually, interviewing people from all of these different organizations, because some of the more mainstream farm organizations said they would have never imagined sitting down at a table with a group like Greenpeace, and they were really careful about doing so. There wasn't a lot of common ground. The common ground was that they all didn't want the introduction of Roundup Ready wheat, but they all came at it from different angles. And so, for example, the Saskatchewan Organic Directorate was arguing about the loss of wheat as an organic crop. The Canadian Wheat Board was acting on behalf of wheat farmers and bringing in the arguments about markets in Europe and trade issues. Greenpeace, of course, more along the environmental lines. Organizations like the Canadian Health Coalition, more interested in potential health risks. Council of Canadians around secrecy and around the around Canadian biotech policy. So they were all really coming at it from sort of different angles, but they all shared this idea that what the corporation was doing in terms of not listening to local farmers' concerns and having sort of the regulatory apparatus captured, those were perhaps the areas of that were most common to the groups.
Yeah, you would expect, I guess, that people would stay with the issue and motivation that was most central to their particular understanding. But I'm wondering whether, as a process of cooperation and coalition building sustained itself, whether you think people began to hear other people's perspectives and assimilate them into their own reasoning as well.
Yeah, I think that is the case. I mean, especially I was interested in sort of the role that Greenpeace had in the coalition because of this antagonism, this historical antagonism between farmers and environmentalists. And I think that certainly the types of arguments that Greenpeace made around the environment were ones that were very conscious to the ways in which farmers are, for example, you know, can be understood as stewards of the land and you know, not protecting a sort of wild nature, but as protecting a nature that is produced by farmers in their fields.
Now, we haven't talked about the government, the Canadian government, and its approach to GM crops. How would you characterize that?
Well, one of the things actually that was maybe one of the things that people had most in common was this charge that the Canadian government was both a promoter and a regulator of genetic modification, so that they were really in a conflict of interest between their different arms. And it is true that since the beginning of genetic modification and biotechnology in Canada, the government has had a very promotional role in terms of promoting, being early adopters of the technology and promoting the technology within Canada and abroad. And at the same time, they had to come up with a regulatory structure and one that would be one that Canadians would consent to. So some of the consent around the way that we regulate GMOs sort of fell apart during this period of time, and I think that was something that the government was most vulnerable on. In Canada, we use a product-based approach rather than a process-based approach, which means basically that if crops if GM crops are substantially equivalent to their conventional counterparts, we ignore the process through which they have been derived. So there's no real mechanism in our regulatory system to deal with sort of precautionary measures around genetic modification.
Well, one way of handling the concern about the effectiveness of the GM and the dangers of the GM is to kind of sit on scientists who are working in government agencies, especially in the area of the environment. But what about in the area of this agriculture and food production, what has now been called the muzzling of scientists? Is this government practice extending to the area of agriculture and food?
Oh, yes, absolutely. And you know, before the Harper regime, it's of course become probably worse since then, but the period of time that I was looking at was before Harper, and certainly it was really hard for me as a researcher to get access to, for example, the Canadian Food Inspection Agency, which is the agency that's charged with regulating plants with novel traits in Canada. I tried at every level of their bureaucracy, and I was turned away almost everywhere. Nobody would sign my consent form. I finally made it to the top. I had an interview, but again, the person wouldn't sign my consent form, wouldn't let me tape record the interview either. And I talked to many scientists at Agriculture Canada, and they did allow me access, but they were really shy about answering any questions that they perceived as straying from the sort of science of GMOs. So they were certainly being told to told not to speak to the public around these issues.
Genetically modified alfalfa is the next crop that's up. How do you see future battles over that and other GM products unfolding?
Yeah, that's going to be a hard one. Last week was the National Day of Action Against Genetically Modified Alfalfa, the same trait, Roundup Resistance. It's one that farmers don't particularly want, but again, it seems that Monsanto is going to drive ahead with that anyways. I think we're really in for an interesting time, because when Monsanto divested from wheat, they reinvested in Australian markets. There will be genetically modified crops that will be coming back to our regulatory systems in the future, and we'll have to figure out what kinds of coalitions we can put together. It's, of course, a little bit more difficult around certain crops. So I think alfalfa, lots of people don't really understand. You know, it's not a very significant food crop, and it's not high on people's agendas in terms of protecting it from genetic modification. So there will be genetically modified wheat crops, though, coming back as well, and it'll be interesting to see if a coalition can be put together of the nature of this one, that because this one was very highly effective.
So how can people who are concerned about this return of the proposals of genetically modified crops, how can we register our opposition?
Well, the best place to start, I would say, is on the website of the Canadian Biotechnology Action Network, CBAN. If you Google that, you can find it online. They've got all sorts of things that are specific to different crops, so petitions around alfalfa, organizations that are actively working in different communities, places to get in touch, and all sorts of resources on that website. I would direct folks there.
Well, thanks for that direction, and thanks for the information you provided in this interview.
Thank you for having me.
I've been speaking with Emily Eaton. She's an assistant professor of geography at the University of Regina, and she's author of the just-released book titled Growing Opposition, Canadian Farmers and the Politics of Genetically Modified Wheat. And that book is available through the University of Manitoba Press.
This podcast was produced by the Red Eye Collective in Vancouver, BC. If you live in the Vancouver area and are interested in creating alternative radio with us, we'd love to hear from you. Contact us at redeye@coopradio.org.